have the great honor to share this session and have even more greater honor to have a chance to introduce our invited guest speakers, Mr. Ulf Wikström. After taking an MBA at the University of Lund, Sweden in 1966, Ulf Wikström worked 2 years with private enterprises in the United States and Colombia before joining FAO in 1969. After 6 years with FAO field projects in India, Ghana, Tanzania, Mr. Wikström moved to FAO headquarters in Rome, where he worked 4 years with the Industries Division before joining the Aquaculture Development and Coordination Program in 1979. 4 years later, he moved back to Sweden and continued to work as a consultant economist in fisheries and aquaculture, mostly for FAO. In 1993, Mr. Wikström rejoined FAO as chief of the Fisheries Development Planning Service, from where he retired in 2005 after 27 years of service with the organization. Distinguished participants, please welcome Mr. Ulf Wikström, our invited guest lecturer.
Conference participants, ex-colleagues, friends, is feeding fish to feed people a viable practice? It seems like a straightforward question. If you ask the person who actually does this, the producer, he will give you a straightforward answer. He will say, yes, it is a viable practice. I'm doing it because I produce fish this way that makes money for me. So there's no doubt about the commercial viability of this practice. The doubt rests elsewhere. If we look at the question in a wider perspective, if we think of the 1,000 million hungry, then the same question doesn't have such an easy answer. Why do we feed fish to fish if we thereby convert cheap fish to expensive fish, or if we actually reduce the amount of fish available? We heard yesterday about fish input, fish output ratios, where you get 1.7, you need 1.7 kilos of fish to produce 1 kilo. The answer seems obvious. This is not a viable practice. Likewise, if you think of the environmental consequences, then you also wonder, is it really good? Isn't there a risk that we run down stocks and threaten predators and other fauna that depends upon these stocks that we feed to fish and shrimps that we culture? So if we think of the viability question, it is not the commercial viability that is the issue. It is rather, is it a consistent practice with reducing hunger? Do we produce more or less fish this way? Do we produce the right kind of fish, cheap fish, for the poor? And is it consistent with environmental sustainability? However, if we look, we should look at this question a bit more carefully and in a wider context. And then we have to think of, then we should concentrate on the people involved and the fish involved. If we look at these two aspects closely, perhaps we will get a different answer. Let us start by looking at the poor. The poor are usually hungry. So no doubt they are well off by getting more, if we make more fish and therefore food available. There's no doubt about that. That is a positive development. But for the poor, is that enough? For the hungry to get out of their hunger, income is the most important aspect, the most important criterion. They need more income. This is something that the World Bank made a strong point about a couple of years ago in one of their World Development Reports. It's income, increasing income of the poor, that lifts them out of poverty and lifts them thereby out of hunger, chronic hunger. So, in fact, I would argue that increased income for the poor, is more important than producing more fish as food. It's the income that is the important point. In fact, income is even more important than employment. This may sound like a contradiction, but if you think in the long term, employment actually may be reduced in an industry that is stagnant if the industry is to keep pace with economic growth. You need to produce more per person if you want the economy to grow and an activity like aquaculture to be sustained. So it's not enough to look only at the availability of fish if we want to judge the viability of this practice. We must look and study what happens to income of those involved. Okay, let us start by looking at the fish as feed. And there are two principal ways of using fish as feed in aquaculture. One is the industrial feeds, where you have industrial fishing, fish meal and oil converted into fish feeds or becoming part of fish feeds, and then you eventually culture fish, shrimps. The other procedure is to incorporate fish directly into farm-made feeds, and you use bycatch or low-value or trash fish that is brought to the farm, and there's a mix of raw fish with other ingredients, and eventually you culture shrimps or fish. But let us look again at the first practice here, the industrial feeds. And what we should do then is we should think carefully about what kinds of fish is being converted into fish meal. A fish is not a fish is not a fish. Fish are different, not only in size and appearance, but in the way they appeal to consumers. Some fish do not appeal at all. Others are very much in demand. So what I've done is that I've classified fish that is being used as for production of fish meal and oil into three categories. You have the industrial grade fish, and you see the amount, it's just represented here by this column, the average amount landed in the year 2001 and 2006 by the major fish meal producing countries. I think the 15, 16 largest fish meal producing countries, they landed industrial grade fish averaging about 1.2 million tons. Now, which fish is this? These are the sand eels and the menhaden, which is produced in the U.S. and in Scandinavia, Denmark, Norway. This is the fish that no one is much interested in eating. Then you have a second category of fish, food-grade fish, food-grade feed fish, and that is the large category here, and that includes the anchovy, and this is why it's the anchoveta, the Peruvian anchoveta, and this is why it's so large. The average landings of these countries were about 13 million tons per year. I'm saying landings, I'm not saying that they were put all into fish meal. The third category is prime food fish, which also ends up time and again as fish meal. And here the main categories are mackerels, sardines, and herrings. If one looks at this, then the question is how much actually goes to fish meal. Well, virtually all of this first column here, the 1.2 million, ends up as fish meal. No one wants to eat sand eels in Denmark or Norway, and no one eats menhaden in the U.S. Maybe I'm too categorical, but 99% of this fish ends up into fish meal. The second category, the food-grade fish, yes, there some of this fish is actually eaten. If you take caplin, for example, some is eaten in Canada, it's eaten in Japan, but it's not very much eaten in Scandinavia, where it is also captured. Same thing with anchovy. Part of it is eaten, but most is not eaten. So here, in my later calculations, I will come to some numbers. I'm saying that 90% of this column actually ends up as fish meal. The rest is consumed by us or by humans. The last column, the prime food fish, I really have no good idea of how much of this ends up as fish meal, but some does now and then. And of course the reason there is that, okay, these fisheries are organized to produce food fish, but sometimes they produce more fish than actually the food, the industry, the canning industry and other industries that convert this fish to food actually can handle. So there are days of boom catches where the egg, what is not handled, goes into fish meal. In my later calculations, I have not included any of this fish into what actually goes into fish meal. But now the interesting question here is, if for some reason there were no fish meal plants tomorrow, what would happen? Well, there would be no, this fishery would disappear immediately. Most of these fisheries would also disappear. This fish would not be landed if there were no fish meal plants to take that fish. Here, as I said, probably this fish would still be, most of this, there may be some directed fisheries here for fish meal, but most is actually conducted to produce food, so most of this would still be landed. But the fact that such a large portion of this fish would not be available if there were no fish meal industries mean that it's a kind of a free gift. If we convert it into fish meal, we are not losing out on any fish as food, because that fish is not going to be supplied as food in any case. If there were no fish meal industries, the fish would not be landed, and therefore we are not losing anything by converting it into fish meal and then using it as fish feed. That's a net gain. There are no opportunity costs there. Then you wonder, why is it that not more of this fish is used as food? It is completely edible. Why is it not used? Well, it's really a question of relationship between the amount of food, the amount of fish landed, and the amount of people. If you take Iceland with a population of something like 200, 300,000 people, I think it's somewhere in the middle there, produces 1.3 million tons of fish per year, or 1.5, something of that order. And they would have to, each Icelander would have to eat about 14, 15 kilos per day if they were all supposed to eat that fish, which of course they can't. So, of course they trade, they preserve what they can, and they trade and they export. But some of it, the fish with least, that is least resistant to handling, the smallest, automatically ends up, either it's discarded or nowadays it's converted into fish meal. And the same thing applies if you look at the Peruvian anchoveta. If that were supposed to be eaten in Peru, every Peruvian would have to eat something like 208 million tons per year, would have to eat 200 kilos of anchoveta per year. At present, the consumption is something like 2, 3, maybe 4 kilos per person of anchoveta in Peru. That's 1-2% of landings. They are never going to reach 200 kilos per person a year. It's only 10 or 8-year-old boys of a young age that think they can live on just one substance. You cannot do that. And there is this automatic tendency that we want to divert. But you should also remember that in Peru there is a very vibrant canning industry, that canned fish is exported from Peru. There has been a promotion to consume anchoveta, but still the consumption and the use is not higher. I've learned that there is a promotion of consumption of anchoveta in Mexico. They have reached something like 100,000 tons, but again, that is 1-2 kilos per person a year. And however much you promote this, you're never going to get to a situation where, under existing market conditions, that fish will be consumed in those regions. On the other hand, if you have a situation where you have a lot of people, take somewhere on the coastline, a point of the coastline here in the subcontinent, where you would have perhaps 5 million people within 50 kilometers, you can land 100,000 tons there per year, and it's only an increase in consumption of, right now I forgot what I calculated, but it's something like 1-2 kilos per person a year, and that is quite feasible. So the reason why not more of this red column is used is simply the fact that it's difficult to transport and make that fish available where it is in excess of the normal needs of the population. So it's a good thing to make it into fish meal, in my view. Now, you might say, here there are, some people might say, okay, we do not accept the present political and economic arrangements that make this happen. We want this fish to be provided to the poor where they are. Okay, if you take such a decision, which would be a political decision, you would then have to find taxpayers' money somewhere to pay to produce the canned fish or whatever fish products you want to make from anchovy or capelin or other of these species. And that could be expensive. If you try to make canned fish out of the anchoveta landings of 8 million tons, you, at 3 kilos per kilo for a canned product, you very quickly get to $20-25 billion per year, the cost of production. And of course, food aid is something that is needed and useful. But the present organism for that, the World Food Program, has a budget of not even $3 billion per year. So it doesn't fit. It's difficult to imagine that such a decision could be taken and promoted. You could also say that, okay, why don't we leave all this fish in the water and we will catch the predators instead, which we like better. But if you did that, to these 12 billion tons that I'm saying would not appear if we didn't have the fish meal industry, then you would maybe get 1.2 million, 1.3 million extra production in terms of predators if you can catch them. Okay, so let us look at some numbers then. I'm saying here that all of this fish goes to fish meal. 90% of this food grade for it goes to fish meal. Prime food fish, I don't know, so I'm not including it. And this means that I have a total of 13 million metric tons being converted into fish meal that would not be converted into fish meal if those plants didn't exist. And if we say that 60% of fish meal is used as aquaculture feed, we heard 70% yesterday, but if it's 60%, then out of those 13 million tons, 8 million tons would be used to produce aquaculture produce. And I am calculating that would give us about the same amount of extra aquaculture produce, that is 8 million tons, assuming that 60% goes for aquaculture. How did I get there? This table shows you what the distribution of fish meal used in aquaculture feeds was in 2008, according to the International Fish Meal Producers Organization, I think. So it's 29%, 28%, marine fish 21%, other species 22%. Here you have a fish meal inclusion rate for the same groups. Here you have a feed conversion rate, which I think I've borrowed from one of Dr. Tacon's papers. And this is the total culture output for 1,000 tons of forage fish. So for salmon and trout, you would get 222 tons from 290 tons of forage fish. Sorry, I'm pointing here with my finger and you can't see it. Sorry. Go back again. So if we take salmon and trout, you get 222 tons from 290 tons of forage fish then, which is a slightly better fish-in, fish-out ratio than we heard yesterday, which was 1.7. And for the total, then you have a fish-in, fish-out ratio, which is just about 1,070 tons of fish for 1,000 tons of forage fish. Fish and crustacea, 1,000 produced. And that is, this is less than what we heard yesterday when there was a claim that now the fish input, fish output ratio is 0.5 kilos of fish to 1 kilo of fish produced. Okay, I started here by talking about how much extra fish we get out of the fish meal produced. Now, if we instead look at what we get in terms of additional employment, here's the... Oh, I better use my this again. For salmon and trout, the 8 million tons, which would be 9 million tons in if the what we heard yesterday also, that the that 70% of world fish meal production now goes for aquaculture feed. If that was it, then this would be higher than it is now. It would be something like 9 or closer to 10 million tons of additional aquaculture produce. But, okay, here we are talking about additional employment, and here you see the productivity in terms of metric tons per man year that I have used. And the top figure here is the actual production. The figure below is whatever follows production in terms of preparation of products, marketing, retailing. So you see that the additional production here is, the additional employment is quite high, particularly in the shrimp sector, with a total additional employment of 3.2 million. Now, is this a high or a low figure? Well, we have seen in the Fan magazine, I think, that the recent calculations of about 30 million people involved in aquaculture, this would be 10%. The older figures produced by FAO are 8 million individuals involved, so this would be a more substantial portion of that that is derived from the additional fish meal produced. But in any case, this is no small figure, 3 million, and what is important here is that shrimp, the employment takes place in developing countries. That is where hunger is prevalent. The most of the employment here. Okay, if we then go to fish used in farm-made fish feeds. The context there is that the context for this practice is that it's practiced in Asia. There is very little of it in Africa, Latin America, or elsewhere. It's mostly used for crustacean culture, marine finfish culture, although some also goes into carp culture and other cultures, and of course catfish culture. It's low-value fish that is used. A large part of it is bycatch. The problem here is that low-value fish is also useful as food, direct food. And this is where the problem comes, that by using low-value fish as feed, okay, you create more fish, you grow more fish, but you also take away some existing fish as food. You create employment on the one hand, but you also remove employment on the other. So little of this practice actually is documented. But a few years ago, FAO reported that 5 to 6 million tons of low-value fish is used as fish feed in farm-made feeds. Now, if we took away this practice, if all of a sudden this practice was not permitted anymore, what would then happen? Well, we would probably lose about 1 million tons from directed fisheries that are directed to get low-value fish to supply to aquaculture. That, of course, would not occur anymore. But low-value fish obtained as bycatch or from other fisheries, from bycatch, would still arrive, but it would be supplied as fish directly as food instead. Now, using this 5 to 6 million tons of fish as fish feed, of course, also generates, you produce more fish through aquaculture, more fish and shrimps. Here I'm saying 3 million tons, and that is basically because most of that fish is used for crustaceans and marine fish, less for other species. So the conclusion here is that if you look at only the food supply, there is a negative consequence. You would have more food, fish as food on the market, if you did not engage in this practice of feeding fish to fish and crustaceans, that is, directly as part of farm-made feeds. Now, if we look at employment, what happens with employment? Again, this is an exploratory calculation. The figures are, you can probably correct me on this, or more thorough investigations will modify them, but we can add 0.1 million of man years of employment from directed fisheries that are directed at low-value fish to supply to aquaculture. Those who make fish feeds on the farm, this is a labor-intensive activity on the farm. There you generate employment, 0.4 million of man years. But what you do also is that you do not have the employment that you would have if the fish was taken to market directly, either after being cured or directly as fresh or cured fish. That creates employment, and that is not there when you use the fish for fish feed. But then you add employment in aquaculture, direct employment by when you use the fish as part of farm-made fish feeds. So the total addition, the total additional employment, about 0.8 million man-years. Take away between. So about 8 million man-years. So here we have a situation where this practice of using low-value fish as ingredients in farm-made fish feeds seem to have a negative consequence on the supply of low-value fish in those countries in Asia where this is practiced. But on the other hand, it increases employment. And employment here I use that instead of talking of income, because it's easier to estimate employment than the monetary values of the income derived from that employment. So we have positive effects on one hand and negative on the other. But as I have said before, that income and employment is really more important than cheap food, then even this practice may, in the end, be defensible. Particularly if we think that the food, the output of the aquaculture is a much more expensive product than the low-value fish that would go to the market. Okay, I spoke in the beginning about the environment as one of the aspects. I will say something quickly about the environmental consequences of this practice. For the industrial feeds first, we know that today, with few exceptions, all the major industrial fisheries for forage fish are managed. There are quotas, there are transponders, they are all under management. It's clear that they affect the ecosystem, but you cannot have fishing without affecting the ecosystem. So the question is really whether the effects are acceptable or not. Of course, management will never be able to perfectly manage these fisheries, because management cannot control the environment. So it's always subject to environmental effects. I think in retrospect, when the anchoveta fisheries collapsed in the beginning of the 1970s and all fingers were pointed at fisheries, in retrospect, I think it has been agreed that the El Nino phenomenon was as much responsible as fisheries for the collapse. And that will continue to be so. So in my view, it is unlikely that in the future excessive fishing will cause extinction of forage fish stocks or of predators that depend upon forage fish stocks, whether they be seabirds or marine mammals or fish. So in my view, the use of fish to produce fish meal is environmentally acceptable. If we look at farm-made fish feeds, of course the major problem is that low-value fish includes a lot of juveniles of commercial species. But the solution to this is not found by prohibiting the use of bycatch as fish feed. It's found in normal management measures, normal fishery management measures. If there were a rule that said you're not allowed to use bycatch as fish feeds, it would not really solve the problem, because the bycatch would then be put on the market in the bycatch in these areas where fish is part of farm-made feeds. If that was forbidden, the fish would instead be put on the market, so you would still have the same problem with the juvenile catch. But as I said before, this is not a global issue. It is really part of what's happening in Asia. But we've heard these few days, or these last yesterday and today, that the culture of marine fish is expected to is seen as something for the future in Africa, in Latin America, and the U.S. So I think particularly in Africa, but also in parts of Latin America, it's important to keep this question of how do you use, what do you feed the marine fish under review, because you might be taking away fish that otherwise would be sold as food. So if we look at the summary table here, and I'm soon finished, I really wanted to make this come line by line, but I didn't manage that. If you look at the industrial feeds, so you have, it's a positive contribution in terms of prime fish made available on the market. Cheap fish as food? Not really. But indirectly. I should here maybe say a few words about this. the criticism that aquaculture produces cheap food, produces expensive fish, is not very well supported to my mind. It is true that the species individually are expensive and that they have declined in price. Salmon has gone down, sea bass has gone down in price, etc. Trout has come down in price. But they are still expensive from the point of view of the poor and the hungry. If the poor and the hungry is our focus, which it is here, for them it's expensive. But now that cultured fish soon will account for 40%, 45% of all fish made available, and that is expensive fish. It means that it has taken away the pressure for increasing prices, so in effect, indirectly, the poor has benefited from the fact that poor or cheap fish is still available. It's much cheaper than it would have been if aquaculture had not existed. Okay, back to this industrial feed summary. Employment, there is an employment of manual labor, other some. Environmental impact reasonable. So this is positive all the way, in my view. Farm-made feeds, it's a different situation. You have some prime fish made available through the use of raw fish or fish fed directly to aquaculture. You have a decline in the availability of cheap fish. There is some employment, positive employment. The question mark is that the figures are so uncertain here, but that's worth investigating. Other employment, no. What did I mean by that? NSI. No remarkable impact. And the environmental impact is not really reasonable from the fact that you take away juveniles. Tuna fattening I've not been talking about, but it does produce, you say, prime fish, it does, but it also takes away prime fish, because tuna fattening is, the fish is taken from the rightmost column, the blue column that I showed earlier in the graph, and the conversion ratio is something like 1 to 10. So if today bluefin tuna fattening produces 50,000 ton and there's a 25,000 ton weight increase, that would amount to 375,000 tons of sardines, mackerels, etc., fed to bluefin tuna. So, but on the other hand, this is an activity that does not involve generally poor people, either in terms of consumers or people employed. Trimmings we have not talked about. I do a bit in the paper, but there, of course, it is a very positive fact that you use trimmings all the way. That's what I had to say. But before closing, I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me. I'm very pleased to have had the opportunity to make this address and to meet old friends again. And in this context, I would like to pay particular homage to Dr. Chen Fuyan, who is much more than only a creator and inspirator and untireable promoter of NACA. And I would like to end up with a proposition, a radical proposition. As you know, one is authorized to usually to dedicate chapters in books or to dedicate books. I'm bad at writing books, so I have to have another possibility. So I would like to dedicate this lecture. And if you allow me, I will dedicate it to Senorita Beatriz de Nogales, who comes from Barcelona and Sitges in Spain, and who, 43 years later, is still the most impressive person I met, and my wife. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wolf. Please understand that the Destiny Kids participants will receive plenty of informative overview from the guest lecturer, Because of time limitation, we are now a little bit behind the schedule. So may I once again ask for a big hand to our guest of guest lecturer, please.